Well, first of all, I'd like to thank the organizers for this opportunity. It's nice to see folks. So this talk is about an amalgam of work with several people that somehow came to overlap. So this talk, first of all, is about joint work with Tony Barry, Martin Bendersky, Sam Gittler, and then what looked like an independent project was joint work with Alejandro Adem and Enrique Torres Giza. So we were studying several things which looked like they were independent. So the first part is on an object called a moment angle complex. So I'll define what that means in just a moment. And then the second part was related to a kind of representation space. That is, you could imagine looking at the space of homomorphisms of n copies of the integers to a group G. And so at first these things look wildly different and they have nothing to do with each other. So what I plan to do is talk about moment angle complexes in the first part of the talk. The second part is on this space of homomorphisms, which isn't quite the representation space that we saw in the last hour. The representation space is the quotient of this thing, modulo the adjoint action of G on the space of homomorphisms. And then the third part is the part where you will probably go to sleep. And then in the fourth part of the lecture, which is the last part, I'm going to give a homework problem to which I know the answer, but not in a good way. Okay. So it's kind of an amalgam of these first two bits. So what are moment angle complexes? Well, they came in various bits, but there's a generalized form of these which start off with a pair of spaces. This is a pair. So that's the first bit. And then the second ingredient is an abstract simplicial complex. With M vertices. So it's probably sensible to say what an abstract simplicial complex means. So you can imagine looking at 2 to the 1 up through M. This is the power set of a set with M points. And then K is a subset of 2 to the 1 through M, so that the following properties are satisfied. If sigma is in K, that it's a subset of 1 through M, and tau is a subset of sigma, then that implies that tau is in K. In particular, as long as K is not empty, then the empty set is in K. So there's an initial object in this gadget. So that's what a where are the erasers? There's one at the far board. Oh, I see it. No, that's fine. That's fine. That's... Oh, terrific. Terrific. Well, I'll soon be erasing a lot. Especially with the homework problem. Oh, no, one more here. I got one. That's great. Right. No, thank you. Okay. Now, what is a moment angle complex? So I'm going to define the moment angle complex. Zk of x and a. So that's the notation for moment angle complex. Now what this is going to be is the union of some spaces. And these spaces I'm going to call x sub sigma, where sigma runs over the simplices in K. And x sub sigma is simply a subspace of the product. And which subspace of the product is it? It's the n tuples where 1xi is arbitrary if I is in sigma, but xi is required to be in A if I is not in sigma. So it's a very simple subspace of the product. Well, it looks like it's a simple subspace of the product. Now, what can we say about this? Well, in the special case where X and A are in the example when X is D2 and A is S1, this was studied by Hochsta, Goreski, and MacPherson, Buchstaber, Panov, Denham, Graham Denham, Alex Sushu, and a bunch of people. I mean, I apologize for giving such a short list, but a lot of people have done really interesting things about moment angle complexes. Now, I'm going to be in trouble if I start to list more people, but there are a lot of people who have proven really beautiful things about this. For example, Hochsta and Goreski and MacPherson proved that the singular homology of ZK splits as a direct sum of Goreski and MacPherson, as well as Hochster's, proved that the homology of these things break apart into a direct sum as the homologies of, I'll be more precise in just a moment, as the homology of some space called K sub I, where there's a degree shift. And that degree shift is by some integer lambda I, which I have not told you yet. I'll tell you what it is in just a moment because it occurs for very natural geometric reasons. Okay? Where I is in M, where M is the full simplex with M vertices, and I is not in K, and K sub I is the full subsimplex, or the full subcomplex containing I. So they prove the homological splitting. The homological splitting arose from well, the Gillespie-McPherson proof arises from stratified Morse theory. Well, now I'd like to list the first theorem that Bari actually let's see, did I twist something around? So X sigma is the...
You embed one in another and we're continuing.
Right, right. Exactly. So the X sigmas are subspaces of the product where the I-th coordinate is required to be in A if I is not in sigma. Okay? So X sub sigma is the subspace of the product. There's this, the I-th coordinate is in A if I is not in sigma. Now take the union of all simplices sigma in K.
So what happens when two of them are contained, if one is contained in another?
Well, then, so look what happens. This is a union inside the product. So they, it's a good question. I just didn't say it very well.
No, you did.
Okay, are you more or less happy with, okay. Okay. Right. Okay, now, here's the first theorem that we proved about these spaces. You could look at ZK of X, comma A. So there's, we're going to prove something about these spaces for general X and A. And the first theorem is that when you suspend this, this is homotopy equivalent to a wedge of suspensions of Z K A, where these will be identified later in the course of the proof. Okay? So what I'm asserting is that the suspension of the moment angle complex is break apart into pieces, but I haven't told you what the pieces are. They're presumably trivial at this stage. Well, let me give you an example of this theorem, an example to illustrate what actually happens. So suppose you look at the moment angle complex for the pair D2, S1, namely the moment angle complex for which Gillespie and McPherson prove a homological decomposition, then this theorem specializes to the fact that the suspension of this space is a wedge of the following. So start off with the realizations of the Ki. So Ki is a subcomplex of the abstract simplicial complex M. So this is, Ki is an abstract simplicial complex. And now you can imagine thinking of the topological space associated to its realization, and then take the join of the sphere of dimension I, where I is the number of entries in here, where I is not in K. And so what happens is that the Gillespie-McPherson homological decomposition actually corresponds to a homological, well, to a geometric splitting. Namely, if you focus on the moment angle complex, before you suspended it, it may not have broken apart. But if you suspend it once, it breaks apart, and the pieces that it breaks into are exactly the pieces that correspond to the splitting of Gillespie and McPherson, at least the homological splitting. Okay. Let's see. Look at this, it seems pretty innocent, clean, nice. I'm going to continue and just put in the remark that this has something to do with classical group theory. For example, a classical theorem of Courage on subgroups of free products follow more or less immediately from these techniques. So now what I want to do is, this is a brief introduction to moment angle complexes, but what I'd like to do now is shift to part two on n copies of Z to G, and why these things have any connection to each other. Why do they admit any connection at all? Well, suppose you think of this space. Well, how would you topologize it? How do you topologize the space of homomorphisms from a free abelian group to a group G? Well, it turns out there's several natural topologies. The one that I'm going to use here arises in the following way. I want to let Fn denote the free group on n letters. And of course, there's the natural abelianization map. Now, that induces a map from the space of homomorphisms of n copies of Z to G to the space of homomorphisms of a free group on n letters to G. Now, the abelianization map is rumored to be a surjection, so this map is clearly one-to-one as sets. And now, how could you possibly topologize this? Well, how are homomorphisms out of a free group specified? They're completely specified by basis, or what you do to a basis. So notice that this is canonically homeomorphic to G to the N. And this map is one-to-one. So there's a nice topology, which is just the subspace topology. And so what I'm going to do now is look at this topologize the subspace topology. And then we're going to look at that. And what I'm now going to report on is this work of Adam, myself, and Torres Giza. Okay. So, I'm going to give motivation for why we were looking at this, but the motivation isn't going to appear until the end of the talk. Okay, so right now I'm going to just talk about some technical properties about the space of homomorphisms. Well, notice what is of n copies of Z to G. Well, it's just the space of ordered n tuples where xi, xj is xj, xi, we're all INJ. Now, there's a kind of singular part. There are several singular parts, which reminds me a lot of your talk in your previous lecture. But I want to pick out something, a special subspace of the commuting n tuples, and I'm going to define S sub n of G to be the following. It's x1 through xn in the space of commuting n-tuples, where xi is the identity for some I. So again, that's a very natural kind of singular subspace. It's only that the identity commutes with every element. So this is kind of a natural, trivial singular subspace. And then I want to consider the quotient spaces, which may look like a bizarre thing. At first, so I want to consider those. And the first thing you might ask is this even a reasonable quotient to make? Why is it even sensible to take that quotient? It could be that the singular subspace is a horrible subspace of the space of commuting n-tuples. And as long as you put in some nice hypotheses, so the first theorem which I'm mentioning is that this is a sensible thing to do. So quotienting out by this particular singular subspace has the following property. The natural inclusion Sn of G in the commuting n-tuples is a cofibration, assuming that G is a closed subgroup of GL MR for some M. So as long as G is a nice Lie group, then this map is a cofibration. It turns out this, and what I'm going to say about the space of representations, one of the trickier theorems, which is a technical theorem, is just this thing, that you get a cofibration. What you basically have to do is flow along commuting n-tuples and make sure that that flow stays in the commuting n-tuples. So it's not always so clear that when you flow along, you maintain a property like commutativity. Okay. All right. No. So the example that, in fact, two people in this room and a third who was here yesterday had a protracted correspondence about is what happens when you put in plus or minus one. And in fact, this is another point that reminded me a lot of your talk. When you look at G, like SU3, it depends on the different kinds of centralizers. The structure of this, of course, depends on the different kinds of centralizers. So what I'm saying is that's important, one, but it is not in the singular subspace. So when I use singular, you should put it in quotation marks. All right? Now, what's the first theorem here that fits with the structure of the space of homomorphisms? And I should say that most of these are just little hors d'oeuvres. The space of representations, we quotient out by the adjoint action of G on the space of homomorphisms, also is going to satisfy the next property. So the property is the following. The theorem is that if G is a closed subgroup of GLMR for some R, then you could consider this space of homomorphisms. And just as in the case of the moment-angle complex, that didn't break apart, as it said. The space of homomorphisms will not break apart into little pieces, as it stands. But what happens is that when you suspend it once, it does the same thing that the moment-angle complex does. And in fact, what I mean by that is you look at the commuting Q-tuples, and you quotient out by this kind of rigged singular subspace. Namely, it's the singular subspace corresponding to the Q-tuples where at least one coordinate is the identity. Not in the center. Something else happens. But where at least one element is the identity, take the wedge of these where you are over n choose q, and then take the wedge of these for q equal 1 to n, and then suspend once. So if you look at these very naive singular subspaces, there's a kind of general fancied up binomial theorem. And the proof of this is basically some jazzed up version of the binomial theorem. Okay, so it's telling you that the space of homomorphisms breaks apart if you're willing to suspend. So as far as cohomology is concerned, it's telling you that the cohomology of this breaks apart. In the case of the moment-angle complex, if you're just interested in cohomology rather than other applications, they break apart in this natural way. Now, these decompositions do not preserve the product structure, as most of you know very well. But let me give you an example of this. Let's look at an example. And then I'm going to go back to an example of a moment-angle complex in a few minutes. But let me give you an example of what happens with the space of homomorphisms. When G is SU2, and you look at the commuting pairs in SU2, and you suspend it, well, there are two natural subpieces that you expect to split off. If you have a commuting pair, if the second entry were the identity, you could have anything you want in the first entry. That would correspond to SU2, so you would expect to get an SU2 splitting off of that, or you could put the identity in the first coordinate and get an SU2 from that, and then what you get is this part, namely the So what happens is if you do this in this very simple case of commuting pairs in SU2, when you suspend, you get two copies of SU2 for trivial reasons, and then you get this gadget here, which is the pairs of commuting elements modulo this naive singular set. Then you may say, well, what is this? Can you say more about it? And it turns out that this is an absolutely classical gadget, in the SL3 admits a smooth embedding in the sixth sphere, and this space right here is homotopy equivalent to the Stanger-Whitehead dual of SL3. So, in fact, what's happening is at the very tip of this, you get very classical spaces which tell you quite a bit about the cohomology or whatever you'd like to know about it. Well, almost whatever you'd like to know. Now, how do these things fit together? How do they fit together? So, let's see. I've given you the definitions, or at least a few definitions here, and some properties. Well, now, I'm not sure what to say at this stage. It's really fun talking with Tony and Sam and Martin and Alex and Enrique. You know, you just look at something and things come out of it. Well, how do they fit? Well, there's a notion of, well, now I'm going to do the third part of the talk, which is the part that will probably put you to sleep. And in fact, I have an email from one of the co-authors here who, in fact, said exactly this. Okay, so this part is about simplicial spaces. What is a simplicial space? Well, it's a family of spaces, X0, X1, X2, and this keeps going. So it's a family of topological spaces. And then I have some, what you might regard as a general nonsense property, namely, you might have face operations. So those are usually written as D0 and D1 out of X1. And in fact, there is a D0 up to a DN out of XN itself. So there are N plus 1 maps out of XN. And then there are two maps going the other way, so there's one map here, there's two maps here for 0 and 1, and so you can N plus 1 degeneracy maps from Xn to Xn plus 1. And now you might ask where these things come from. So historically, that's a very interesting question. But the most trivial example that I know arises from something called the moment angle complex. Namely, an example of a moment angle complex, or at least a space homotopy equivalent to it, is the configuration space of points in R2. So I'm going to list that as an example of a simplicial space. The naive example, maybe I'll call it, well, maybe naive example's a good choice. These arise from configurations of points in the plane. So let me say that in a precise way. Suppose you think of the configuration space of n points in M. So these are ordered n tuples where Mi is not Mj if I is not J, where M is a space. Now, how could you imagine going from n points to n minus 1 points? Well, since this is a subspace of the product, they're natural projection maps. And so, in fact, you could look at the projection maps. So, how would you get a simplicial space out of this? Well, you could you need to be able to map in two ways out of the first one. How can you imagine having two projections out of a configuration space? Well, if you want two projections, you better put in two configurations here. And, well, if you have two, oh, so notice that there's a kind of shift. So you have to have two configurations in degree one. And, well, in degree n, you would need n plus one configurations in order to have n plus one projection maps. And then again, these DIs are really projection maps, but there's a shift in labeling by degree one. Okay, so you might think of D naught as delete the first coordinate, and then D1 would be delete the second coordinate. So it's a very simple thing to do, just delete a coordinate. This gives you face operations. But then somebody should have protested and say, how the devil do you get a simplicial space out of this? You get projection maps, and they work very well. But they generally aren't these things. You don't have degeneracies. But if you stick in m, if you change m to something q cross r1, then you have degeneracies. And the degeneracies are just gotten by, in some sense, using a kind of doubling on r1. Okay, and if I don't lie to you, you don't quite get.
So,
if you let M be a space, not necessarily a manifold, but a space with a Euclidean factor, then notice what you can imagine is, think of the Q factor this way. What is the configuration space? It's ordered n-tuples, which are distinct. Now, suppose you have such unordered n-tuple, then you can imagine taking another one, pushing this over in a fixed direction, in a small distance. And notice you can adjust those so you get configurations again. Those give you the degeneracies, but again, not on the nose. I've lied to you again. They give it to you up to homotopy. So in fact, instead of putting in
Right.
So let's just think of R2. So suppose I have 3 points in R2. Well, what can you imagine? If they're distinct, then there are small disks about them that don't meet. This is rumored to be Hausdorff. And so what can you do? You can make a choice of picking a configuration in some fixed direction. So if you're a geometric topologist, what you'd end up doing is picking a framing and pushing along the direction determined by the framing a little bit. Okay? Did that make sense? So, right. The identities only hold up to homotopy. That's right.
Pardon me?
Even the definition is only No, no, the motion of the simplicial space. Exactly. That's a homotopy theoretic notion. Exactly. So instead of putting in the configuration space, if you put in the fundamental group of these things, where M has a copy of R1, then you actually get out a simplicial group. And you might wonder, what is this thing computing? Why would you care about this? What does it have to do with anything? All right, well, now I want to state some more theorems. So there are the two splitting theorems. Let me state a third splitting theorem, which, in some sense, goes back to a time when, I think, essentially before everyone in here was born, but I'm not clear that anybody ever recognized it as a theorem. So the theorem is, so this is a theorem and the theorem is the following, that F star denote a simplicial space. And somebody should have asked me, what do simplicial spaces have to do with these commuting n tuples? No one's asked me that yet. That's part of the last section. So right now we're going to start off with a simplicial space, and we're going to assume the following. If you think of the n space and the n minus first space, then there are degeneracies applied to the n minus first space that land in the n space. So you can imagine taking the union of these for I equal 0 to n minus 1. So again, this is a kind of singular part. You take a look at the n minus 1 simplices, look at the images under the degeneracies, so you can think of that as somehow the kind of singular part of the n space, and we're going to assume that this is a cofibration. We're all in. So, for the folks who actually specialize in simplicial spaces, this turns out to be a standard assumption. Then here's what happens. If you assume that this map is a cofibration, then one, the suspension of the nth simplicial space is homotopy equivalent to the wedge of the Q simplicial space modulo the union of the singular part. So you look at the singular part of the simplicial space, take the union of those, quotient out, take the wedge over nq2 and the wedge from q equal 1 to n and suspend it. So if you suspend the n space, it breaks apart. And you can ask what these pieces are. Well, here's what they are. If you look at the geometric realization of a simplicial space, then it's filtered. It's naturally filtered, and you can ask about the quotient. And that turns out to be exactly the n-fold suspension of Xn modulo. I'm just going to put down the singular subspace. Okay, now, what does this have to do with anything in the previous sections? what do these fans have to do with each other? Well, let me just list some points rather than calling them theorems. The collection of spaces is a syncytial space. In other words, they assemble in a nice geometric way. You can jazz these up. You can take G cross these things and get an analogous syncytial space. What can you do with this? Well, I want to look at the geometric realization. I want to look at the geometric realization. And I want to call that B2G. Now, why does the letter of the number 2 come up here? Where does 2 come from? It turns out that the free abelian group is the free group on any others modulo the second stage of the descending central series. You can do this modulo the L stage of the descending central series and get a syncytial space out of it. You can do it for the non-P descending central series. You get a nice syncytial space out of it. Here, if you take the resolution, or if you take this critter, you get a space E2G. And now, I see my time is running out. Let me just say why these things might be halfway interesting. Why are they halfway interesting? These are all functors from the category of groups to the category of groups. And at least a couple of people in here like to work out homology or cohomology. Let me give you a homework problem about the homology of these things. So here's a little theorem. Suppose if G has odd order, that means it's finite, then there's a vibration of this sort. And I'm not going to write this out, but the theorem is that these spaces are all k pi 1s. But the interesting thing here is when you have a vibration of k pi 1s, you get a little short exact sequence of groups, so that this thing acts by conjugation on that group. And you can actually see a little bit of the action from these spaces. So what I'm basically asking is, well, some of us are working on this homework problem, but let me just say what it is. The problem is, understand the conjugation action of pi 1 of B2G on pi 1 of E2G. And now, why is that interesting? Why is that an interesting thing? Well, this would tell you about the map from H1 of E2G to H1 of B2G. Okay, and this is the way, since you get a vibration, there's a map from H1 of the fiber, that's H1 of the fiber to H1 of the total space, and in fact, it factors through H1 of the action of G on here. So how can you figure this out? Well, the theorem about moment angle complexes that I mentioned earlier, which retrieves Donius' theorem, tells you a lot about this action. It doesn't tell you everything about the action. And so the real problem is show that this map is not onto. When G is a finite group of odd order. So you got this very simple action of G on E2G. There's a geometric action of G on E2G. And in all the cases that we can work out, this map is not onto. And so why would you care about that? Well, at the beginning of the lecture, I said, I'm looking for a good proof of this. And it turns out that this statement here is equivalent to the Flight-Thompson theorem, that G is solvable if and only if this map is not onto. And so you want a natural thing to do is to try to understand the action of pi 1 on the homology, that is, the local coefficient system. Now, my guess is that we're never going to be able to do it. In general, it's very, you can work it out for many finite groups of odd order. But it's not clear yet whether there's a proof. And I promised Tony that I'd give a proof of this. So if anybody, I better quit, but I'm happy to write down the proof of this after I quit, if anybody wants to see it. Thank you very much. It's a homotopy invariant. Suppose you've got x comma a, x prime comma a prime, which is a homotopy equivalence of pairs, then you're in business.
Okay, suppose I start off with some group and it doesn't have the, some good properties that you might like, but I replace it by some other topological group.
Oh, there's something beautiful with that. Here's a topological group. Start off with a topological group whose classifying space is homotopy equivalent to a space X. So remember, if X is either a connected Riemannian manifold or a has the homotopy type of a connected simplicial complex, then there's a topological group that has the homotopy type of loop X.
Okay,
so you get some good things.
No, well, what I'm planning to do is to replace everything you've done by replacing the topological category by realizations of simplicial simplicial sets. So that
it turns out the moment angle functor commutes on the nose with geometric realization. So what you're doing.
But when your problem was, or you had cases where, for example, you said if I didn't pick an element, the identity, if I pick some other
element which was only in the center,
right.
I
now have co-vibrations.
Right.
Working in the category of simplicial
sets,
everything is a co-vibration.
No, I'm going to object if you ignore the topology. But in these constructions, that we, in many of the constructions, we required that these things be co-fibrant. Then we, if you have a simplicial space, so,
but I'm
sure
that if you're
allowing
me to replace my X comma A,
that's not so you want to replace, so you can do that. You can do something like that by just geometric realization. Take the moment angle complex of the geometric realization. I'm happy with that, but I'm not sure where you're going with it.
Well, I'm saying that why work in the category of simplicial spaces where you have to worry about whether or not you have the picture co-fibrant. Work in the category of
simplicial
sets.
I guess if you know everything has the homotopy type of a CW complex, then I'm happy about that. But in order to have something have the homotopy type of a realization, to work to use simplicial sets, you're not looking at arbitrary spaces. You're looking at arbitrary spaces through the eyes of a homotopy theorist.
We said I could replace things by other things which were homotopy,
but
changing the result.
But Paul, I think it's not the case that every space is homotopy equivalent to the realization. There's a weak homotopy equivalence.
Yeah, that's true.
And so I know the theorem for homotopy equivalences. I don't know, it's a really good point. I don't know if it's true for weak homotopy equivalences.
Well, I wasn't so much thinking of that, because there are cases where you can replace by an actual homotopy equivalence. What you started with was an isomorphic pair.
Right, if you start, oh, I agree. If you start off with a good pair, then I'm happy. Then I'm happy.
If you were starting off with a G and some element of the, some nice G, like a subgroup of GL.
Oh, no, but there you actually, here.
The identity.
Oh, no.
I will use simplicial sets, but I've got a nice G, so I've got an actual equivalence to a simplicial set. And now I'll pick some element of the center rather than the and not worry about any of this.
That may be, but this worries me a lot. I'll tell you what worries me a lot. In order to actually show that you have some reasonable properties with this gadget, you actually needed to use heavily the underlying structure of the lead group. You're telling me there's a way around it, maybe. I don't know. I'd be interested in that. Sorry. Oh, thank you.